Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thanks for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. A fantastic show this week. We're looking at a way of negating many of the problems of alcohol.
Alcohol is the second leading cause of death to tobacco. Alcohol globally is responsible for over 3 million deaths a year, which is twice all the other drugs put together. So it is a huge global problem. And worse, it actually tends to kill young people. Alcohol is the leading cause of death in men and women under the age of 50 in this country.
Professor Dave Nutt has developed an alternative to alcohol and is suggesting that it could improve the health and the life of millions. So please do stay tuned for a great show. Also, please remember that you can join me for a gentle cycle ride. I'll be on my What Bike static bike. You can be on any sort of bike. Join me on Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays at 12:30 on the Relax Back UK YouTube channel. Now, on with the show. Right, so my guest today is Professor Dave Nutt. He's an academic at Imperial College, and the topic is all about an alternative to alcohol. And Professor Nutt is a neuropsychopharmacologist, which is very hard to say, and I'm going to get Dave to say what that is. Did he make it up? Does it really exist? And how did he become one?
So it is what it says on the tin. Neuro means the nerves of the brain. Psycho means the functioning of the mind. And pharmacology means the use of drugs to explore how the brain and mind work, and also how to develop new therapies for people with disorders of the brain and mind. So my background, I'm a psychiatrist by training, but also I'm a pharmacologist. And I bring the two together because, as I suppose many of your listeners now know, but not everyone does it, the fundamental connections between nerves in the brain, and there are 100 billion nerves in the brain, the connections are made by chemical release. They're not electrical, they're chemical. So the brain is a chemical organ. And to study chemicals, you need to use things, other chemicals called drugs or pharmacology agents. So I use drugs to help people get over disorders like addiction, but I also use drugs to explore brain function.
Okay. And how much of your time is spent in research and how much of your time is spent in treatment, seeing patients?
Well, now I just do research. I did my 40 years in the NHS. And I think I helped a lot of people, but I realized I could probably help a lot more if I really focused on research. Because if I invent an alternative to alcohol, which I've done, that potentially could have a global impact. Whereas me running my specialist clinic down the road here in Hammersmith, I might only help two or three a week, whereas I could help millions a week by giving them something safer than alcohol.
Right. Well, you've opened the door to what we're going to talk about today, the research you're doing on trying to find an alternative to alcohol. Where are you based, actually? Is this work happening at Imperial College?
No. So I'm half-time at Imperial College and I'm half-time developing these alcohol alternatives in a place called Hemel Hempstead with my colleague, David Oren, who's the chief executive. I'm the chief scientist of a small company called GABA Labs. And GABA Labs was set up 5 years ago to essentially give people a functional alternative to alcohol. So people who like the relaxing social effects of alcohol can avoid the toxicity of alcohol by drinking our products, which are called Sentia and Cask and Gabir.
Okay. So, I mean, it's the time of year when people do dry January and that sort of thing. People do want to drink less, but
yes,
I mean, do many people want to drink less? Are there lots of people that think, I've had enough of alcohol, I'm going to try and cut down? Is that a common thing? How many?
Well, the majority of people think dry January is a good idea. I think estimates say up to 80% of people have considered dry January. Considerably fewer actually go through with it. But the fact that people are considering it tells you that They've either realized that they've overdone it at Christmas, or they've realized that they've spent too much money on drink at Christmas. So Dry January actually is a really very clever idea, because it helps people deal with both the health problems and the financial complications of overindulgence.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, let's just a summary of the health problems. You know, a lot of people drink. A lot of people drink too much. But for those that don't drink, obviously, too much, is it really that bad? You know, I drink a glass of wine now and again. You know, I kind of like it.
Absolutely. And that's not dismiss the fact that most people drink because, as you say, they like it and they're not addicted. They like to drink because it gives them some psychological benefit. That's why alcohol has existed in human society for as long as we have any records of human society. The problem is about 20% drink too much, and then they get into serious problems. And you may not know this, but globally, alcohol is the second leading cause of death to tobacco. Alcohol globally is responsible for over 3 million deaths a year, which is twice all the other drugs put together. So it is a huge global problem. And worse, it actually tends to kill young people. Alcohol is the leading cause of death in men and women under the age of 50 in this country, which is a kind of chilling statistic that most of us don't want to believe, but it is true.
Goodness. All right. I hadn't heard that. So it's worth, well, I suppose from a business point of view, if you can offer an alternative, you're onto a good thing. But apart from anything else, you know, if you can offer something better, different, that works, you've done a great service to mankind, maybe.
Well, that's my argument. And that's why we set up the company. I mean, just as I've been working in this field pretty much all my life as a doctor, which goes back to 1975. And for the first 20 years, I worked on finding ways to reduce the harms of drinking, to stop people who've given up relapsing to drinking, to help people get detoxified more easily. And that all proved very, very difficult, because alcohol is an extremely promiscuous drug. It affects so many of those chemicals in the brain, which the brain relies on.
Right.
It was about 20 years ago when I was working as the lead clinician on a government program called Foresight, that we realized that you could never find antidotes to all the effects of alcohol. Just not possible. And one day in a brainstorming session, we thought, well, hang on. Then the answer is clear. We just replace it. And to do that, you have to understand how alcohol produces its different effects.
Right.
Now we know that. We know that the effects that most people seek, when you drink your glass of wine every few days, you are seeking almost certainly relaxation, possibly socially, when you're chatting to someone in a bar or even in your home. That's what most people drink. Most people use alcohol to relax them, to increase conviviality, sociability.
Absolutely. So you spent 20 years looking for something that could provide the positives. This would be an impossible task or question, but can you give a potted history of your research and what you found?
Yes, well, it's not just my research, but the world has been trying to deal with the problems of alcohol, really, since certainly the ancient Greeks wrote about it. But modern science has told us that alcohol has stepwise effects in the brain. So the first drink, the first glass of wine that you drink, is having its beneficial effects to you through enhancing in the brain the brain's calming transmitter, which is called GABA. And if you enhance GABA, you relax. But if you carry on drinking, when you get to your second or third drink, then it starts to affect other transmitters. It starts to release dopamine. And that's why you might get loud and argumentative. And why you want more, because dopamine is a moreish transmitter. It also starts to release endorphins, the brain's natural opioids. And that leads also to wanting more, because they induce craving. And also they induce dependence. And then if you drink even more, you start to forget. You get amnesia and blackouts. And that then eventually can lead to problems like hangover. And of course, if you have too much of the poisoning, then you can die.
Okay. So this...
We don't want that. We just want the primary effects of alcohol, the relaxing effect that you want as well.
Okay. So there's this other drug called GABA, you said. Is that a similar drug to alcohol? Is it a similar compound, similar shape, you know?
Well, interestingly, it is similar, but GABA is not a drug. Let me be very clear. GABA is a neurotransmitter. Your brain, you've got 100 billion neurons in your brain making it work, okay? 85 billion of them are on switches, turning your brain on, learning, practicing, laying down memories, 85. And about 10 billion of them are trying to calm your brain down, trying to keep your brain under control. Because if you have too much of the on switch, you end up becoming overexcited and you end up having seizures, etc. So the brain is balanced, and the on switch is called glutamate and the off switch is called GABA. So what alcohol does is to enhance the effects of GABA to calm the brain down. And that's why alcohol is particularly effective in situations where you are slightly anxious, which is normal in social situations. And I like to say we are really social creatures. The reason we have dominated the whole of the globe is because we work as social people. We work in groups, we work in communities, we work in as nations, etc. That sociability is powerful, but most of us are a bit anxious when we meet strangers. And that's why alcohol is served in events where strangers come together, mm-hmm. like parties, like celebrations, because it dampens down that intrinsic anxiety that humans have. It puts them into the state where they can actually interrelate and interact optimally with other people.
So it's providing a little bit more of something which is in our brain naturally, or there anyway.
Exactly. It's boosting our brain's natural calming neurotransmitter called GABA. And that's why we're called GABA Labs, because we want to just do that. But what we are making, our products, they only do GABA. They don't do dopamine, endorphins, glutamate. They don't do all the things which cause the problems with alcohol. And they don't damage the liver and the heart and the blood vessels and that, as alcohol does through its other non-pharmacological mechanisms, okay. which are free radicals and the damage from...
You know, so how do you get hold of it to put it in drinks? Do you synthesize it, or does it occur naturally somewhere?
Great question.
I do love it when my guests say great question, you know. It doesn't happen very often.
Right. So we're taking two parallel approaches. One approach is to make a small molecule. We call it Alcarel, which will mimic the effects of alcohol on GABA. And it's a kind of silly pun, but you've all heard of Canderel. So Canderel is the sweetener that gives you the taste of sugar without the calories. Alcarel will give you the effect of alcohol without both the harms and the calories. Mm-hmm. But that's a small molecule. We've invented several. To get that into a drink, we have to go through a process of food safety testing, and that is very expensive. So while we're raising money to do that, we've also gone down the route of finding natural alternatives to Alcarel, botanical herbs which contain molecules which also enhance the effects of GABA in the brain. And those herbs have been around for a long time. A lot of people know that there are relaxing herbs. What they didn't know is those relaxing herbs actually are relaxing to a very significant extent because they enhance GABA. So what we've done is we've taken herbs which are established in the food chain, and we've blended them together to make these drinks, which are called either Sentia, if they are new drinks, or as we've more recently done, we've put herbs together to make drinks which mimic old drinks. So we now have a botanical alternative to whiskey called cask. We have a botanical ingredient which we can put into non-alcoholic beer called Gabir. And next week, we're releasing our first cider, which has the functionality of cider, but none of the alcohol.
Okay. Very interesting. You said something during that I just want to pick you up on.
Yep.
You said you a lot of these GABA enhancing compounds exist naturally in plants, etc. So I mean, Professor Dave is just a drug pusher, isn't he? He's selling marijuana essentially.
Yeah, marijuana's not as good as alcohol. We know that. No, I'm not. I'm what we are selling are drinks.
I'm not being completely serious, but I want an answer.
No, it's a great answer. No, again, another good question. No, I mean, I think I could reflect it back to you. A lot of people don't realize that alcohol's a drug. In fact, it's only in the last few years that the British government has accepted that alcohol is a drug and has allowed us to compare the harms of alcohol with other drugs, which is why, I told you earlier on, that globally we know it's more harmful than any other drug other than effectively tobacco. But I'm not pushing drugs. No, what we're doing is we're giving people essentially botanical extracts, which give people what they want from alcohol, which is relaxing. They're not getting addicted to it. So I think that's quite an important distinction. Yeah. We're not pushing people to a point where they can't not use our drinks.
And what plants do these extracts come from?
Well, they come from a range of different plants, some of which you might have heard of, such as ashwagandha, damiana, passion flower. Some come from plants you probably haven't heard of, you know, like magnolia. And we blend them together to make drinks which have this pro-GABA effect, this relaxing effect. And then we also add in other botanicals to accelerate the uptake and to maximize the benefits. And also, obviously, you've got to give flavoring as well. So the drinks are flavored so that people can enjoy drinking them, yeah. Whether either neat or with mixers of their own choice.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Depending on the plant that you derive this stuff from, does that affect the taste?
Yeah, taste is important because botanical extracts often are quite bitter, and so we put a lot of research into how we can produce drinks which are themselves have acceptable flavors. Quite often people say, oh, they're quite interesting flavors, they're different from other normal drinks. But now we're working on ways of replicating the flavor of whiskey and beer and cider. It's not so difficult, actually, with beer and cider, because what we do is we get the beers, we've got a stout, we've got an IPA, and we've got a cider, and they are brewed naturally. So they've got all the range of flavors that you get from the apples or from the barley and the hops. And then we take the alcohol out and we put in our ingredients. So obviously beer with hops, you know, that hides any kind of bitterness that you might get from the botanical ingredients. Same with cider. Ciders are full of all sorts of botanical chemicals that come from the apple. So they hide the flavor. It's more challenging when you want to make whiskies, and currently we're making an aperitivo and also a rum. There we have to, it's a bit more challenging. But we've succeeded with the whiskey, and the whiskey drinkers are now saying, wow, that's interesting.
Because that actually, I'll take whiskey. The whiskey making process has been honed for like hundreds of years for it to be what it is. So, you know, some people might say, well, you're trying to knock something up in a couple of years, it's not going to taste the same.
Yes, it's not exactly the same. It's not exactly the same. But I can tell you there are people who now, who want to cut down on their whiskey, who are saying, okay, well, we'll maybe have a glass of whiskey, we'll have a glass of cask, a glass of whiskey. You know, it's called zebra striping. So, you reduce your alcohol intake by, in between the alcoholic drinks, you drink drinks which don't have alcohol. And we have other people we've had people who say, well, I used to drink whiskey and I stopped drinking because I don't want to drink at all. And they've sampled the cask and they said, wow, I'm not going to drink it anymore because it brings back the memory of whiskey. So that's quite a strong piece of evidence that it actually is touching the same senses that that whiskey touches.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Now, alcohol affects not just the brain, it affects other parts of the body, which to a large extent is kind of part of the problem.
Correct.
What about your compounds? Do they affect other parts of the body in any way?
Well, they affect parts of the body where enhancing GABA has an effect. And it turns out that that's true in the gut. GABA is a relaxant for the gut. People often say that they, after drinking Arsentias, they don't have the tension in the stomach that they had before. So we think, and we can show that. We can show that using physiological measures. We can show that the gut relaxes if you put Arsentia in it.
The gut relaxes. Hang on, that's not always a good thing in a social situation.
Only the stomach. I should say the stomach.
Okay.
The higher parts of the gut, yes. I don't think it causes flatulence, if that's what you
mean. That is exactly what I meant, yeah.
Yes, quite. It relaxes the gut, but not to an extreme. We've not had reports of problems. Let me put it that way, Mike. But the other interesting thing, which is emerging, and something I didn't predict when we first started this, everyone's now got very interested in the microbiome.
Yeah,
and it turns out the microbiome, many of the good bugs in the microbiome, like GABA. GABA makes them grow faster and makes them more effectively good bugs. So we're actually beginning to explore whether our drinks might actually enhance microbiome function as well as brain function. But the important thing is that what our drinks do not do what alcohol does, which is produce toxins. So alcohol itself is a toxin. Obviously, it's a toxin. Why would you, if you cut yourself and you wipe an alcohol swab on it, you're doing that because alcohol will kill bugs. And we know that bugs are pretty tough things because they've got capsules around them. So if alcohol can kill bugs, it can kill cells. And alcohol does. It kills cells in your gut. It kills cells in your liver. And it does it partly through alcohol and partly through the metabolite, the breakdown product, acetaldehyde. And that leads on to damage the cells in your heart and also particularly the cells in your blood vessels, the endothelial cells in your blood vessels. And that then leads to the laying down of plaque and also the consolidation. The plaque becomes more stiff and then much more problematic if it breaks off and causes strokes.
But so all these things aren't necessarily obvious when you say if this, a few hundred years ago we were looking at alcohol, these things you've mentioned, not necessarily immediately obvious without quite a few years' experience and quite a lot of scientific work.
Absolutely. I mean, the science of alcohol has really blossomed since the Second World War, since people started to understand the scale of the harm. And we've all known since ancient times that over-drinking can lead to serious problems, but we'd never had the tools to study it.
Have been doing the experiment on ourselves, if you like, for a few hundred years.
Yes.
So I guess my question is, the experiment on ourselves or a few volunteers, I don't know how you do it, for these new compounds, for GABA, is kind of new. Are there potentially long-term things we should be worried about but don't yet quite know about?
Well, two things to say about that. The first is that to produce take the alcohol through to turn it into a food stuff or a drink, it will go through food safety testing. And if it passes that, then by definition, it's safe. The herbal drinks, the Sentias, they all contain herbs which are already approved as being safe because they too, like alcohol, have in many countries, many instances, been used for hundreds of years. So if they were causing problems, we would almost certainly have discovered them by now.
Right. Okay. Yeah, no, good answer.
We can also, Mike, we can also mitigate the risk by making sure that our drink doesn't get you intoxicated, so you come to harm, as many people who are drunk come to harm by falling over and hitting their heads. And also the duration of the effect is quite short. It's less than an hour, which means that you're not having an impact on the body for anything like as long as alcohol. Because if you get drunk on alcohol, you know, the alcohol is present for at least 12 to 12, you know, 15 hours afterwards, which is, so it's continually damaging the cells of the body.
Yeah. Well, so that partly answers my next question. I want to know, could you ingest GABA type drinks and drive home, operate heavy machinery, fly an aeroplane?
We would prefer you didn't. We don't advise anyone to do dangerous things like that who've taken anything that makes their brain feel different. And so, you know, if you're very, you know, the same way as you shouldn't be driving if you've, you know, got COVID or you've got influenza, things which change your brain chemistry, you know, make you more potentially more vulnerable to accidents. So we don't recommend people using our drinks to avoid taking responsibility for driving. No, but again, as I said a minute ago, the fact that these are quite short acting means that you effectively are free of the impact within an hour or so. So once you know you're free, then you should be fine.
Yeah, that's interesting. What about the cost? You mentioned at the start of this, and you know, everyone knows a pint of beer in a pub now is a fiver or more.
Yeah.
What about this stuff?
Well, yes. A bottle of Sentia is 20 drinks, and it's about £30. So, you know, it's considerably less. Depending, and of course, maybe there's a cost of the a mixer if you want to add it to a mixer, but it is significantly less than certainly buying alcohol externally. Yeah.
But presumably, a large amount, it doesn't attract tax. It doesn't attract alcohol tax.
Yes, because it's not alcoholic. No, it doesn't. But it is actually quite expensive to make because it's quite a sophisticated drink. So, because you're blending multiple herbs, and it's like non-alcoholic drinks. The stability is surprisingly good. It needs a year's stability. But you know, it's not. Alcohol is amazing because, you know, whiskey's
at last forever,
know,
doesn't it?
Only whiskey can last a century.
Yeah.
You can put down wines, it won't last as long as, because alcohol, because it's so good at killing things, when you've got enough alcohol in your drink, you can store it because nothing else can live in it.
Right, right. Okay, so this is very interesting stuff. So in the future, if, you know, half the population are drinking Sentia or something, well, things will have to change because at the moment, you know, I can't start a pub in my front room because I need a liquor license.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Could I set up a shop selling this stuff without any sort of liquor license? And, you know, this could just change the way sort of society works.
That's the plan, Mike. That's the plan, yes.
Okay, that's interesting.
But can I just, we are not against alcohol and we love pubs.
So do I. I love pubs.
And we love pubs because pubs are the focus of social engagement. That's why pubs exist. Pubs existed for the working man to get together with other working men after, 12 hours of grinding work and relax and socialize. And now pubs, I am now in London here, pubs are being sold off, every day turned into apartments, etc. We want to bring pubs back. But we want to bring pubs back where you have an equal opportunity to have a functional drink like our Carell or Sentia and alcohol. We think by law, all licensed premises should be made to sell or have available, publicly displayed, functional alternatives so that people can make a rational choice, that they can either choose to relax with alcohol and take the risk, or they can relax with Sentia and have less risk. We think that should be a requirement of licensing.
That's interesting. I mean, with any change in sort of the fabric of society, however small, things need to catch up, like the law of the land. So if I went and drank a bottle of Sentia and crashed my car, well, you know, I wouldn't actually at the moment be guilty of, maybe driving with undue care and attention, but certainly not driving under the influence of alcohol.
That is correct. That is correct. And I think that's true, actually. I mean, there are many reasons why people drive badly, and it's not just related to alcohol or drugs that are testing for it. The reality is, blood testing for alcohol, breath testing for alcohol, is a proxy for impairment. Some countries have impairment tests. Impairment tests catch everyone,
yeah,
and they would be much more, they're much fairer and would be much more sensible than absolute levels of drugs. Because one of the other problems is that drug testing is now being used to convict people who have taken a drug sometimes days before, but the metabolites are present and they're being blamed, their accidents are being blamed on vanishing these small levels of the drug. So we need to change society. It's functionality that's critical, not whether you've taken the drug or not.
That's a big topic. I might have to invite you back for a whole mini series on that one.
I'd be very happy to talk to you about that. But I am in favor of breath testing. I don't know if you saw today, there was an announcement suggesting that young drivers should have their threshold breathalyzer down to 20 from 80, which I completely support, because we know young drivers are much more vulnerable to the effects of alcohol than older drivers. And they're also suggesting that we should bring the level down for non-young drivers to 50, which is what Scotland did, and we should do that too.
Yeah, interesting.
And that would probably half the number of alcohol-related deaths on the road.
Might do. Back to you and the future for your research. I'm assuming there's more research in the pipeline, not just on tastes and things, but on how it affects people. And how do you do this? Do you get a load of volunteers and get them to drink a bit and then give them tests, or is it all in a Petri dish or on animals? How does it work?
Yeah, you start in the test tube. You start on the bench. And then you start in the chemistry lab if you're making new molecules, and then you test on mammalian tissue to see that you're targeting GABA, because the GABA system in mammals is different to the GABA system in other animals. So, and then once you've got your functional testing done, then you take it and give it to volunteers, and you look at what they say. And we're beginning now to look at more objective measures. So we're beginning to look at the thing called facial recognition. People smile more when they they've drunk the drinks, in the same way they smile more when they've drunk alcohol. And that's kind of hard proof that we are improving socialization, because the smiling is particularly obvious in relation to other people. So when you're looking at other people and they're smiling, you're more likely to smile yourself. And that shows that you're engaging with them in the social way that we want to engage as humans.
Very interesting. So these tests, presumably, the results have all been published in peer-reviewed journals and everyone can go and have a look at them.
We've published some of the preclinical data, the scientific data. No, we're not publishing the human data yet, because we're in the process. We've got to sell the drink. We've got to. Do you know what it costs to publish a scientific paper these days?
I can't imagine.
Costs thousands. No, I mean we're in the business of using science to make drinks. We're not. We are a company rather than, because that's in the end our money goes towards making better products and educating people about the products. The scientific community, they can wait. Because they know what we're doing. They've been watching us for a while, so they won't be surprised by what we publish. But we could publish, yes.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Now, if people are listening to this and think, right, do you know what? I fancy trying some of this stuff. How can they do that? Can they go to their local corner shop and buy it, the supermarket, the pub? What's happening?
Yeah, best to buy online. And the reality is because we're a small company just setting up, you know, most of our sales are online. So if you can go to our website, centiaspirits.com, and you can order the centias or the casks or the beers from there or the cider next week. Or you can go on Amazon and we sell it through Amazon as well.
Okay. This whole thing is absolutely fascinating, I think, Dave. And I will be intrigued to follow it, see what different ranges of drinks you come up with. I happen to really like beer, a nice bitter. So if you have produced one of those, I am going to try it. There's no question.
Well, send me your address and I will send you. We have an IPA, which is delicious. And we have a stout, which I think is even better than Guinness Zero.
All right. I wasn't angling for a freebie, but I'll take you up on the offer.
I want you to have a freebie. I think you should be. And because it's a functional Guinness Zero. And you may not know, I mean, Guinness Zero apparently is the largest selling beer in Europe at present. So yeah, we could, and that's indication, the fact that people want to drink and they want to drink in pubs, but they don't want to get drunk. And if we can give them sort of Guinness Zero Plus, well,
good.
What's not to like in that?
Well, look, this is all fascinating stuff. So, Dave, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to chat.
Lovely to talk to you, Mike.
Thank you very much to Professor Dave Nutt for being such an interesting and fabulous guest. I will report back when I taste the beer and let you know what I think. I'd also like to remind you about my book, Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health, based largely on some of the fabulous guests I've had on the show previously. Thank you for listening and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.